This is the Brownline Church podcast. My name is Vince Brackett. I'm one of the pastors at Brownline Church. So glad you're joining us this week. What you're about to hear is our message from last Sunday as we spend the entire month of January talking about neighboring. If you haven't heard us use that word before, I'll explain a little bit in this message, as well as tell some stories from my own prayer life. And finally, we end with a bit of a call to action to help fill out our Neighboring Aid Google form. And this is meant to help fill out a database for our church of resources and services that people in our community can offer to one another, as we want to increase the bonds of mutual aid amongst people in Brownline Church. The link for that form will be in the show notes today. If you have anything else you want to share or tell us about, please follow up with us. Get on our Discord or email us, brownlinechurch@gmail.com. You may know, if you've heard me speak before, that I, similar to what Mike was sharing, I didn't grow up very spiritual, and I didn't necessarily have negative experience of church, as Mike was sharing, but I didn't have really any. I had neutral experience. It was very like middle of the road. So I had familiarity with some of the forms and the symbols and the stories of Christian faith. But I was not encouraged to pray or build relationship with God of my own or anything like that. So when, as a young adult, I eventually ended up in a very spirituality-focused church where personal relationship with God was encouraged and prayer was intentionally modeled and taught all the time, the idea that God was communicating, listening, and speaking was emphasized. That was extremely intriguing and also like new and strange to me. One of the things that really stood out to me that I would hear people say in this setting that was so new to me is, I'll pray about it. Like, I'm sure you've heard that phrase, I'll pray about that. And specifically like when an ask was made of somebody, an opportunity to help was before somebody, maybe to give some sort of time or energy or money towards something, the person would say, I'll pray about it. And I knew I'll think about it, right? I knew what that meant, right? You weigh the pros and the cons. You check your calendar, right? You check your budget, right? Like I knew what I think about it, or I will think about it meant, but I didn't know what I'll pray about it meant. It struck me that like I almost wanted to ask, like, what's the point? What's the point of praying about something? Because my questioning wasn't motivated by like I was skeptical that God was communicating, and I could, maybe God might hear me, or I might hear something from God. It wasn't actually that. At this point in my life, I'd had some spiritual experiences that I couldn't explain. I felt like, okay, there is something beyond just me and the material world. I was sold on that. So it wasn't the idea that God was communicating. It was more like I was asking, what's the point? Because praying about it was like, if there is a God who cares for people, won't the answer to asking, should I help, always be yes? That was my wondering. Like, isn't that the case? I wonder what you think about young Vince's wondering. I wonder if that registers at all for you, or if you've ever wondered that. I gradually realized that there is wisdom to this idea of I'll pray about it. It just took some discovery for me. I didn't understand it immediately. So I remember hearing a pastor early on in kind of my thinkings about this I'll pray about it idea, this pastor would eventually become a friend of mine and a colleague, said something that really cut to the core of Vince. I've passed it on here actually at Brownline many times, so maybe you've heard me say it before. He said, you are not responsible for not doing what God is not calling you to do. You are not responsible for not doing what God is not calling you to do. So this pastor was pitching a very different proposition. God might not say yes, right? Like if I ask, should I help in this situation that's before me? God might not say yes. It's an open question. But like, I think what was bubbling up in me is, but if I'm not responsible, who will be? right? And there was the discovery that I needed to make. Because I was at the time, and still am in many ways, a hyper-responsible person. To my detriment, my childhood as the even-keel kid among more volatile siblings formed in me this sense very early that everything is always my responsibility. To put it one way, I think I have a very overactive conscience is maybe one way I've learned to put this. So, predictably, I unconsciously reasoned, if I go to God about any potential responsibility, anything that's on my plate as, will you help? It will be confirmed that that, just like everything else, is indeed my responsibility. That's why I didn't see the point. Like, why would you pray about it? Shouldn't you always help? But my conclusion was not actually built on any sense of God being good. It was built on my notion of hyper-responsibility. And that was a light bulb moment for me. I'd conflated those two things. And looking at it this way, you know, it's actually pretty funny. It's like I think now that I have eyes to see this, and my assumption was a very like me at the center of the world type of way to live. Like, you know, it's a little self-important to feel like all responsibility falls on your shoulders, right? But more than that, if there is a good God who is trying to guide me toward helping and serving others, wouldn't it follow that God is trying to do that with everyone else in the world too, not just me, right? Like, maybe this idea that I have to carry all the responsibility is just madness. God doesn't require me to take on all responsibility. God does, I think, require me to take on some responsibility, an appropriate amount of responsibility. What a relief for my overactive conscience. So this is the wisdom, I think, that people were expressing when they would talk about, I'll pray about it, when they would say things like that. The question that we bring to God in this sense is not an abstract, like, is this a worthy thing to do, God, when somebody comes with me with an ask or needs help. We're not asking, in theory, should we help? We're asking a very specific, concrete situation. God, is this thing before me an appropriate responsibility for me right now, in this current moment, given these current circumstances? That is what I learned people meant when they said, I'll pray about it. And this has become an indispensable practice to me, learning how to do this. When an ask is made of me, when an opportunity to give my time or energy or money towards something, when it comes to me, when a matter in the world grieves me, I pray, God, what are you calling me to in this? How are you guiding me here, right now? And this works so well in tandem with what has always come naturally to me is I'll think about it. Like the weighing of the pros and cons, the checking of the calendar, all of those things. To add to that, a consideration of like, maybe there is a God who is communicating, and that God can guide me in this moment to make a wise decision. To add that to the weighing of pros and cons, so helpful. That's more really helpful data to make choices. And it works really well as a check and balance to my feelings in any given moment about my capacity. So as someone who struggles with being hyper-responsible, I wonder if some of you kind of would regard yourself as having an overactive conscience as well. I'm really grateful to live in a time and live in a culture where self-care has become an often discussed topic. Like we are really highly attuned to the feeling of caring for others at the expense of caring for oneself. We see that very readily today, and that's great. But if the only data I am relying on are my feelings in a given moment to determine my capacity, like whether to help or serve another person, that's like far too reactive to be useful. I'm in danger of like everything will be an imposition if I had a bad morning, right? And so feelings are important. They're useful, but they're not the only information we can rely on because, you know, as I learned from my therapist, feelings are like waves. They crash on the shore and you feel them intensely and then they recede and maybe you are thinking differently later on. So we can include feelings, but we can also include this other data. Maybe God can guide me. Maybe God can say, yes, you are at your very brim of capacity, but this is an important responsibility take on. Or maybe God can say, no, you know what, Vince? If you take this on, you're going to pass that threshold, and you're going to take out your anger at feeling so imposed on your wife or on your kids or on your friends, and you don't want to do that. Maybe there's something that can add to our thoughts and our feelings, and it's this spiritual sense of a God who will speak to us if we pray. So the mystical streams of Christianity, and I'm thinking about this as Teal mentioned before, of like, ooh, yeah, what is prayer for? I think I'd be curious what you all think about this. The mystical streams of Christianity point to many of the portrayals of Jesus, particularly in the Gospel of John, to describe this sort of prayer. I want to show you one of the scriptures that's often brought up in these traditions. It's really, maybe it's one you've heard before, but it's really beautiful the way that they read this. Jesus says, "Very truly I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself." The Son himself can do nothing by himself. He can only do what he sees the Father doing. Because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all he does. Now, I love this passage the way that mystical streams of Christianity have read it. For one thing, I love it because it's a classic example of Jesus favoring parental love as his primary metaphor for God over other popular metaphors for God, for the divine in his day, and certainly they're still popular in our day, of like the imperial ruler, right? The controlling CEO is what we would say today, right? Or the warrior king, which is a popular view of God in his day. The scrupulous judge, right? Who is you know, making a list and checking it twice. And so Jesus favors parental love. I love that about this passage. God is like a good father. But more to the point of the Christian mystics, they draw from this passage the idea of this personal back and forth between Jesus and God, who he regards as his father. As Jesus discerns, what is faithfulness to my life call? What is my responsibility in any given moment? Jesus is not alone in that discernment. Jesus is looking to God, his father, and God is guiding him, showing him what his father is doing so he can do likewise. The activity of discernment, of trying to figure out what's your responsibility, is not pressurized. It's not exhausting in this picture. It's characterized by love, by parental love, by guidance, by like, you imagine like putting your God putting his arm around Jesus saying, this is what we're doing next. And according to the Christian mystics, this experience of Jesus is meant to be taken as a template for all people. We are not alone in our discernment of what is our responsibility in a given moment. We can look to God, what the Father is doing, so we can do likewise. That activity for us is meant not to be characterized by overwhelm. Oh, God, another responsibility. What do I do? It's meant to be characterized by the care and guidance of a parental, loving figure. So, to zoom out for a second, I maybe you relate to me, as I mentioned before, of like, you also feel on a personal level you are hyper-responsible or you have an overactive conscience. Maybe you relate to, maybe you don't. Maybe that's not your experience. Personality-wise, it's probably like, it's probably a bell curve in this room, right? Of like some of us are probably right in the middle of how much responsibility we take. Some of us take on a lot, like me, I'm on that side of the bell curve. Maybe some of you are like, no, actually, you don't struggle with that at all. You're on the other side of the bell curve. But beyond our personality differences, I think there are cultural realities common to us all in our world right now. I would argue that in our age, so connected by technology, so information saturated, right? We can pull out our phones and get any information on anything we want immediately. I would argue that however under or overactive our individual consciences are, to be alive today is to be in a constant state of your conscience being pricked. No matter how overactive or underactive your conscience is, because information is everywhere. No ask for help or tragic situation or need anywhere in the world is hidden to us today. We can and do often hear about everything the moment we take our phones out of our pockets. And then, of course, within our immediate social networks, not just like what's going on out in the world, there have never been more communication avenues for the asks and needs of those in our lives to surface and present themselves to us. And these are all for worthy reasons, right? Our consciences are not wrong for feeling in a constant state of being pricked, but we're just a little bit overwhelmed as our consciences go. So I think a question of our time is, what do we do in this reality? If like, just to be alive, you wake up tomorrow morning, you go to work, you come back, just and throughout the background, like, there's just this low grade, my conscience is feeling off, like I need to do something. And that's just the experience of all of us all the time. What do we do if that's our reality? So I think it is. We can't pretend that we could sustainably respond to every prick of our conscience. Take it from somebody who has struggled with hyper-responsibility long before high-speed internet was a thing in everybody's pocket. But inevitably, like, we also can't turn cynical, right? Like, that's no way to live. Like, we have to find some way to do this. This is a necessary task. And I want to say that if we can find ways to navigate this reality beyond just our conscience and beyond just our feelings in any given moment about what our capacity is, can we wisely and compassionately discern our responsibility to others, our responsibility to the world, where it doesn't short-circuit us, but we actually experience, like, hey, I can do this. Those asks can come before me, and I don't shut down. I don't end up taking out all of my frustration because I'm so imposed out on the people I love, but I'm able to receive those, take care of, like, you know, okay, what do I do now, God? And then move forward in confidence. Can we find a way to live that way? The kind of spirituality that I'm talking about this morning has been this to me. This is what I'm talking about when I say I'll pray about it. When we wait and listen and do only what we see the Father doing in any given moment, I can be sure that a good God will guide me to take up some responsibility, an appropriate amount of responsibility, but not all responsibility. And I can be sure that God is not solely relying on me, but trying to guide everyone else in the world as well. Thank God it's not all on me. What the Father is modeling for me may be different than what the Father is modeling for someone else. This is the idea of that back and forth, everybody experiencing this individually, and in so doing, needs are met, asks for help are responded to, but not in a way that is just burning out the same people every time. So I find this incredibly helpful. I also love the idea here that if there's something to this idea of praying, I'll pray about it, waiting, listening, God might speak to me. The other important part of that is that it's a dynamic picture of being able to respond to what's coming at me. It's not like, because life doesn't have a manual or a glossary where, you know, somebody asks you if you would like to do something and you know, oh, well, let me turn to, it's an alphabetical order and, you know, I'll find, yes, do I help this person move? Let me move to, go to the chapter on moving, helping a friend move and, you know, and like, that doesn't exist, right? We need an ability to respond to the individual experiences that come on our radar. Do I help in this moment? So let me tell you practically what this looks like for me, and I am curious to hear if you have experiences praying in this way, if this is something that you've been exposed to before. I would love for you to share for everyone's benefit in Discord, like how this looks for you. I'll tell you how this looks for me. It can happen both in regular rhythms of prayer that like happen, you know, daily or weekly. It can also happen in like spur of the moments prayer that are just, I needed this in the time. As I often share, my personal best time for prayer is getting up early in the morning before my kids are up. And often a part of that prayer is like, God, here are my asks for the day. Here's what's before me. And, you know, like, what are you calling me to join in? And what are you calling me maybe to kindly respond that I cannot help? How do I do that? How would I? And then I wait for something, you know, wise words to emerge of what I could say to somebody. I trust that will emerge in my brain if I give it space. Other times, this is more spur of the moment. Kazi or I will be asked to help with something or donate to a cause, and I'll take 30 seconds to pray. God, how much do I donate? You know, and there's no fireworks with such listening prayer. I'm not saying that this is like some sort of like life-changing experience, but it's just it teaches you to take a beat, trusting that you are not alone in your discernment. And it teaches you that, you know, it kind of dials down the overwhelm of like, oh my gosh, now I have to respond to this person. Like, oh, okay, God is with me. I can take a beat. I can wait. I can respond confidently after taking a moment to pray. So if you're not experienced with this kind of prayer, one practical thing that I will suggest you can try is a $20 experiment. I've done this in a large group before, so it had some like, we're all doing this together accountability to it. And I don't think I'm going to encourage that right now, but perhaps other people will be trying this with you this week if you want to. It's something you can do alone too. You take a $20 bill and you pray, God, who do you want me to give this $20 to? And then you listen internally. You teach yourself this idea of, I'm praying in a listening posture, trusting that God can communicate. I remember one time I did this. I gave the $20 to someone I encountered who was unhoused that day. Another time I tipped a barista after buying a $3 coffee with 20 bucks on top of that. That was nice. Made their day. Another time when I did this with a group of people, we were all out to eat and we pooled our $20 because we were all doing it at the same time and gave the waiter a massive tip. So on top of, that was really fun. We saw their eyes light up. Sometimes people can feel stuck trying things like this because the common question is like, well, how do I know what is God's voice versus what is just my own thoughts? And I'll pass on something I've passed on before. I love what the writer on spirituality, Dallas Willard, says in response to this. I'm going to put this up on the screen here. It says, God comes to us precisely in and through our thoughts, perceptions, and experiences. God can approach our conscious life only through them, for they are the substance of our lives. So what I would encourage is if you get kind of hung up on like, how do I know if I'm being quiet, if that's God? What Dallas Willard says is, what's God versus what's my own thoughts? Throw it out. When God speaks, it's both. It doesn't mean every thought you have is God speaking to you, but God uses the mental furniture of our own minds to speak to us. So the idea that the world is not just material stuff that I can touch, but there is a God who is spirit and can speak to me in my mind if I quiet myself and listen. This idea is God will speak through the things that are already swimming through your brain. Do you ever have a thought that is like particularly hopeful or loving or encouraging or connecting or convicting in a good way, not in like a guilt trip way? That the Christian mystics of the age would encourage us to they would encourage us to regard that as God speaking to us. So the things like a $20 experiment can help us log some experience practicing this sort of listening prayer. Highly recommend it. It's great. Embrace it. You can hear from God. All right. So to close for today, I'm talking about prayer. I'm talking about responding to asks for our responsibility. I want to place all of that in context for our church over the next month. So on Sundays here at Brownline, all of January and maybe a little bit of February, we're going to be underlining the fact that there are legitimate needs and asks for like help, problems, struggles. There are legitimate asks for help all around us. They are people in our own church, all over our neighborhoods, especially in the winter when so many of us struggle with loneliness being cooped up in our homes, when those among us more forgotten by our larger societal structures are in most danger physically, economically, socially. There are needs and cries and asks for help all around us. We are underlining this all month, not to guilt us into action. That's not my hope. We're underlining this because to not talk about this is to bury our heads in the sand. And I don't want us to bury our heads in the sand. I want us to live as courageously and intentionally as we can in the midst of the challenges of a world that is sometimes unjust, that is all the time exhausting for modern people living in cities, and that occasionally feels too much to bear for some of us. Jesus said that the whole of his Hebrew tradition's call on life was summed up by love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And early on, when we started this church, We heard someone inspired by that summary from Jesus use the word neighbor as a verb, like to neighbor, the act of neighboring. And we liked that because it felt like it captured the significance of, like, Jesus is trying to summarize the meaning of life, you know? It felt like it captured that, but it also had a humility to it. It's not a claim to say that I'm going to neighbor. It's not a claim to, like, change the world, right? It's just a promise to contribute to goodness as best I can around me, amongst my neighbors. But like I've talked about this morning, it's not a commitment to carry all responsibility. It's a commitment to carry an appropriate amount of responsibility. What is the right amount of responsibility for me to carry? Humility is so often missing in our modern era. We think we can solve every problem with technology. We too quickly look back at people who came before us and judge them for how terrible they were. I heard someone say recently, the world needs less people who want to change the world and more people who just want to change their neighborhood. And that feels true, right? It struck me. I was with a couple other people in our church this past week for a little informal book club. We had all read and been moved by the famous 19th century Russian novel, The Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky. This was my first foray into like famous literature. I usually read nonfiction, but one friend in the church was kind of pushing me. You need to read Dostoevsky. You need to read it. So I've become a literature nerd. And as we're talking about this, there's a scene in the story that stood out to us where one character is expressing angst over their experience that the more they love humankind, the more they found they detest their neighbor. Isn't that interesting? The more you love humankind in general, the more you detest the particular neighbor right in front of you. Like, to make love this big idea that you hold to in general for all people in a paradoxical way is detrimental to the commitment to actively love the particular human right in front of you. Because if love is just an ideal, people are just instruments for you to attain your ideal. They're not actually their own person. They're dehumanized. All you care about is your ideal. You don't care about the distinct human who deserves your respect and your honor right in front of you. That's so fascinating, right? This is a good book. It was really good. But like, Dostoevsky wrote The Brothers Karamazov in the 19th century, and he's thinking about this. He's playing with this idea. How much more true is this for us today, so interconnected in the internet age? To love humankind. Well, we all profess to do that. I love all people. But sometimes that makes it hard to care for the individual neighbor right in front of you. Neighboring. There's a lot to this word. So we've adopted this word as our church. This is what our theme is going to be all month. Not as a guilt trip, okay? There's a lot of needs out there. All of us in this room, there's a lot of needs represented right now, but we're not saying this to guilt anybody into helping. We're saying this because we don't want to bury our heads in the sand, and we want to do this well and sustainably, to neighbor one another and to neighbor others around our community, believing that God is there as a help to this, communicating to us if we slow down long enough to listen. So we're going to do several things. Throughout these Sundays here that are focused on neighboring. We're going to have some more messages from Haley and me. That will be some of what we do. We're also going to have some interviews with community organizers beyond Brownline who we're connected to and who are doing really good neighboring work. I'm looking forward to that. We're waiting for confirmation on a couple of them. So, you know, fingers crossed this happens, but I'm hopeful they will happen. I think that will be a really different and good Sunday to kind of learn how to neighbor. And then one of the Sundays this month, the kids of Brownline are actually going to be preparing and helping lead our time together so we can participate in a specific neighboring project serving older adults experiencing isolation. So you will hear more about that from the kids as the month goes on. If you are a parent of a kid 8 and up, and you think they'd like an experience of group leadership or like event planning or service, let me know, because they can still join. The first planning session is going to be next Sunday during church. So yeah, just let me know if you're not already on our list for that. We're also looking for one more adult volunteer to help with this. So if you'd want to hang out with some older kids and help them plan a service project that will be here at church at the end of this month, also let me know that. And then finally, last thing that's going on as we're talking about neighboring, our church's solidarity team has been working on increasing the bonds of mutual aid and support between people in our church. Like, how do we grease those wheels so it happens more often? We've talked a little bit about like the background here of like our church is a young church and that we're only 11 years old. And so some churches, you know, they've been around for like hundreds of years, like or more. And so you have people and families that have been in that church for decades. And so they have all of this like built up communal bonds. We don't, by definition, we don't have that because our church only started existing 11 years ago. And we, you know, like, I think people like each other here, but that rich, long-standing communal bonds, we need to help build those types of things. And our solidarity team has been thinking about this. How do we increase those bonds of solidarity, mutual aid? And so one of the things that they've been doing in the background, they're asking our help, okay? So I'm going to put up I didn't do this. Okay, I don't have a QR code for you, but don't worry because it's going out in email today. So if you're on our email list today, you will get the first invitation to fill out an online form that our solidarity team has developed, and this is going to ask you about the resources and services that you in general feel like you are able to offer. So we're encouraging you, set aside, it'll probably take you 5-10 minutes to actually fill out. It's not like a super quick form, it's something that will get you to think, so take a minute. You also have all month to do this, so if you don't get to it today, no problem, we'll remind you again. But the goal is to end up with a database that can help Haley and I as pastors, with help from our solidarity team, spark neighboring connections between people in this church. If we know more of the long-standing things that are true about you and what you have and the services that you can present and the resources that you have, like maybe it's like things like I have an extra room if somebody needs some place to stay, or it's something like I know how to change a flat tire. You know, it's all over the map, right, of the different ways that you can be a member of this community to others in this community, that you can neighbor. This will be so, so helpful for Haley and me because we're often the people who will receive like an ask, and we can be like, oh my gosh, I can look at our database and think, I can connect you to somebody in our church who can help. Think about the ways that this can subvert, you know, people get priced out professional services so often because everything becomes so expensive and we don't actually have communal bonds. We just, you know, go to the app to get that service met. But what if we could live more communally and not just have to rely on these services that increasingly price the poorest of us out? What if we had more communal bonds? That's some of the idea here. So that email will go out later today. I'm excited about this. I think it's going to be a real big help. And we would love for you to fill out that form before the end of the month. Okay, neighboring. This is what we'll be talking about. Not today, but this is what we'll be talking about next Sunday and the next several Sundays. All right, I would love to pray for us in that space. So get comfortable in your chair. Feel free to close your eyes or open your eyes as I pray. I do want to lean into this prayer that I'm talking about right now. I'm going to make the guess that every one of us probably has some sort of ask for our help that has come to you in the last week. And so if that is true, call that to mind as I begin praying for us, okay? God, what are you calling us to in this specific ask that we have in mind? What are you modeling for us as that loving, perfect parent? It does not have to be the same thing that the person next to us is thinking or feeling or seeing. It can be something uniquely for us. So we slow down now, and we present to you the responsibilities that are possible for us to take up. We ask you to guide us. I'm going to take a moment to be quiet and let anything that's going on for you internally play out for a second. If anything is happening for you as you're quiet, just continue to let that be. Don't let my speaking interrupt you. But if you feel like you might need some help, let me pray some words on your behalf, and you can sort of co-sign on what I'm praying right now. God, I'm unsure what to do. And I feel a pressure that I have to, like, that something I would do or not do in this situation would become like some sort of statement about me forever or about what I believe in general, and that stresses me out. So God, zoom me in on just this specific example. What do I do in this moment? What do I do for this question, this ask before me? Would I release all of the pressure of having to, like, show what kind of person I am? Would I release all of the pressure? Would you release it for me, God? Come and just release the pressure of having to, like, make a statement. I don't have to make a statement. I have to make a decision. Help me understand the balance of the pros and cons of my feelings about my capacity and about your guidance. Help me see that sometimes it is okay and wise and good and meaningful to get right up to that capacity, even pass it, because it's such an important thing, such an important responsibility. But help me also see that that's not every instance. Sometimes I need to say no. And then, God, I pray now for all of us that this would not be our only experience of this type of prayer this week. That the next ask or responsibility that comes to us, that we would again turn to you and you would speak. And we would find ourselves with enough space or margin to hear you speak. Would this all feel like a very connecting thing? Would we be reminded that we are not alone in discerning what is next for us? None of us have to carry the weight of our entire lives and our constantly pricked conscience alone. We have a God of love who's like a perfect parent, putting their arm around us and guiding us. We thank you for showing us this, Jesus. In your name we pray. Amen.